Good morning. It's a pleasure to be back here among you. I think it maybe was about 5 years ago that I was here to preach and share about the work of Renewal House. And thank you all so much for your participation in the UU Urban Ministry in Roxbury and the many ways that you connect with our programs and our ministry there over the years, whether it's in our ESL program, our Renewal House shelter program, through our Roxbury Youth Program, our newest program, Jericho Road Roxbury, and also Bethany House, our transitional living program. It's a blessing to not be in this alone and to know that you all are walking, journeying, talking, singing with us along our prayerful journey. I also just want to say it's lovely to be back with Reverend Ann Bancroft, who served with us at the UU Urban Ministry just a few years ago. And you're blessed, I'm sure, by her leadership and ministry and presence among you. And wanted to just give a special shout out to one of our board members that's here this morning, Alan Cody from the First Unitarian Society in Newton. And also Elise Hendricks, who is from Jericho Road Roxbury's steering committee. So they'll be available after the service to learn more about the urban ministry, as well as Rebecca and myself. It's always a blessing to me as an American Baptist minister to have the offering taken before the sermon. It's just, it just takes a load off, I think, for me. That's always something that was stressful in my training, and my father, who was also a Baptist minister, sort of seeing him struggle with the sermon, knowing that what came out of it would be a reflection of how people's response was to his words among us. So thank you for doing that for me this morning. It was almost 10 years ago that I started as the director at Renewal House, a domestic violence shelter for 5 families or individuals at a time in Mission Hill. When I began the job there, I was new into ministry. I had served in a congregation in the North Shore for about 2 years, new to Massachusetts, having grown up in North Carolina, gone to seminary in Berkeley, California, and then relocated here to the beloved Northeast to experience one of the coldest winters that I had ever experienced in my life. And when I started at Renewal House, I knew my life was changing. It was then that I realized that I myself was in an abusive relationship, in an abusive marriage. My high school friend and I had been married for 8 years, and we had struggled now and then. But after the birth of our son, things got rougher. And when I say that I realized I was in an abusive relationship, I must clarify that the abuse that I was experiencing was not physical. It was emotional, it was mental, it was financial, and it was power and control that I knew or believed that he had over me that caused me to be fearful, sad, and incredibly, incredibly insecure. This is the experience of many of the individuals that we serve at Renewal House in our shelter program and in our community outreach. And again, though I had done work in the field of sexual assault and domestic violence prior to coming to Renewal House, this was a realization for me too. That the majority of the people that we work with didn't experience physical or even sexual violence. Only some of their violence had been that. And in fact, they, like myself, had been sucked in to a deadly experience, a deadly cycle that had eaten away at their soul, and they had lost themselves in the midst of their lives in the midst of their relationships and in the midst of trying to go on a path that they did not want to go down. But many of us who have experienced abuse or violence in our lives, have been taught from a very young age not to value ourselves, not to believe that things could be different, not to believe that we deserved something better. So, like most of the individuals in our shelter, I went to a domestic violence program and said, "What do I do?" And the person that I met with said, "All you can do is go to court and get a restraining order and get him out of your house." This is a man that I love. I still love him, even though we are not living together or married. And I was supposed to go to the court and go to the police and get him out of my house, have him not have a relationship with our son. But it was more than that. It was also this understanding or belief that I couldn't have ambivalence about these feelings, that I couldn't myself be confused about what the right decision was or how to take care of myself while also being concerned about how to take care of him and how to take care of our son. But I did what I was told, and let me be clear, I am very thankful and proud for the many women that fought tirelessly for the laws that are upheld in our state to support women and men who have experienced violence and abuse. However, the system that is now created or has been created around these laws is incredibly imperfect and incredibly unjust, and in many ways, incredibly unhelpful and dehumanizing. I went to court. This white, straight, Protestant, middle-class woman went to court, and I got myself a restraining order, and I felt humiliated through the entire process, how I had to explain everything, how I had to defend everything, and all the while sitting there thinking, I don't know if this is even the right decision for me to be making. And then I reflected. I reflected on those in our shelter who are not like me. Those who are not of a middle-class background, those who are not white, those who are not straight or even have the same gender identity or understanding as I do, those who are not citizens in this country, those who do not have community or support. If it was a challenge for me to go through this process, me who in many ways this process was created for, if it was a challenge for me and dehumanizing and humiliating for me, what could it be like for others? Others who we sent from our hotline, others who we sent from our shelter, others who we walked with through that process ourselves. I wouldn't wish this experience on anyone, but it definitely was a wake-up call for me about how we were providing services to all kinds of people and how broken the system is. So we started having conversations. I started having conversations with people in the shelter. I started having conversations with staff who had been working there for 15 or 16 years. And many of them had given up hope that the system could be any different. In fact, many of them said that the system that was in place had co-opted our movement and had made it impossible for us to really bring about any change. As a person of faith, this made me incredibly angry and incredibly passionate about what I wanted to do, what I wanted to do with others, to name what was happening, but also to bring about change. So we started talking with the survivors in our shelter about what was working and what wasn't working, about the services that we were providing. We started there because we felt like it would have been easier for us to talk about the system and how messed up that was than for us to look at ourselves and what we needed to do to be able to provide services that mattered, support that was helpful, resources that could be transformative. And we learned a lot. And the thing that kept coming up from those that we talked with in the shelter program was that they were worried about themselves, but they also felt like those who had been abusive to them didn't have access to information or services or supports around what they could do to get their lives in shape. Not to get their lives in shape necessarily in order to be in relationship again, but to get their lives in shape so that they could be the mothers or fathers for the children that the survivors wanted them to be. But I don't know if you know, but the system is set up so that we, by virtue of our funding, are not allowed to work with people who have been abusive. So this set up a fascinating dynamic for me, because I didn't want to get taken off of my mission of serving those, or get Renewal House taken off of its mission of serving those who had experienced violence and abuse. And yet I was hearing from those who experienced violence and abuse that this was a service that they needed. So we as a staff started brainstorming together about how this could work, how we could make a way out of no way, how we could follow the lead of survivors that were telling us that the system was broken and that we were complicit in it, and how we could partner with other folks who wanted this to be different. I find that when looking at the criminal justice system and all of the ways that it shapes the way we look at one another, and in particular, the way that we in the domestic violence movement have looked at men, has been incredibly unhelpful to us shifting this dynamic. This dynamic of understanding that men have struggles and women have struggles, and that the system of patriarchy that surrounds us within the context of our culture and really in the water that we drink is not anyone's fault in particular, and that each and every one of us need a hand in understanding how things can be different, how our struggles have informed who we are, but do not define who we are. So I started looking for something else. I wanted to find something else. This has kind of been an ongoing journey for me since childhood, so it seemed rather familiar to me. I wasn't going to do it the way everyone else was going to do it, something my mom said I was always like. So I started finding people who were thinking about this and willing to listen to me and hear my story, but also willing to recognize the significance of the stories we were hearing within our shelter. One of the first people I found was Jim Ptacek, who wrote a book, Restorative Justice and Violence Against Women. He edited it. And it's an opportunity, it's a sharing of all kinds of programs across our world and some within our own country that are doing domestic violence and sexual assault work differently. models of restorative justice which are bringing communities together to take on the issue of violence against women in a very bold, vulnerable, strong, and loving way. Bringing families together who have experienced violence, bringing young children together to talk about that experience of loving two parents so much and being incredibly confused about what's happening between the two of them. So I sat with Jim and learned from him. I read his book, and I just started soaking in all the models that were out there, wondering how is it that we could embrace something different in the context of our program in Mission Hill. And I started getting connected to more people. People like Janet Connors, whose son was killed about 10 years ago here in the city of Boston, and who was one of the first people to ask for the opportunity to meet as a victim, to meet with the people who perpetrated that incredible violence. She has gone on to create circle programs for other survivors of homicide in our city. I met with people like Strong Oak and Kendra Hoyt, who are from Native Indigenous backgrounds, who have practiced circle opportunities, healing circles throughout the context of their lives, bringing people together to promote community and connection and transformation with grounding in the sacredness of all beings. And most recently, our staff attended a training with Syra Pinto Owens, a woman who is serving at Harbor Cove, a domestic violence program in Chelsea, who again has been living a circle practice restorative justice model within the context of working with survivors and those who have perpetrated violence. I found people. I found a community of people who were working, who are working, and yearning for a new way that isn't about punishing people or shaming people or humiliating people or assuming that if we lock people up and have them go away, that somehow the issues or the problems would too go away. People that are interested in coming together and sharing our stories. Sharing the stories of our hurt and our pain, sharing the stories of the ways that we've hurt ourselves and hurt one another in the hope and the dream that somehow we could heal from this and move forward on a new path. I started attending circles. I went to circles in Jamaica Plain with predominantly people that were ex-offenders. I went to circles in Roxbury with people who were in substance abuse programs. I went to circles in Concord where law enforcement folks were getting together to talk about the challenges of their work. I found out that there were some real people out there, real people that wanted to share their stories, that were searching for meaning in their work, and I loved it. This was like church to me. I had sort of given up on the church at this point. This is what church and true community ought to be. So after meeting and talking and witnessing and being a part of so many different opportunities to learn and dream big about what else we could do, we started a men's group. A men's group for people who had been abusive. A men's group for fathers, mostly, who were having struggles within their relationship or struggles with their children. We really started it because we thought that this would be an opportunity for men that were connected with folks in our shelter or in our community outreach program to come together and talk with one another. Unfortunately, those aren't the individuals who came, But there were others who joined us. Others on a journey for 2 years who met together with myself and another male facilitator to talk about the struggles of being a man, the struggles of experiencing life as a boy, the struggles of articulating what manhood could look like now that maybe had never been thought of in our lives as children or as fathers or parents or those thinking about being in relationship. It was a transformative experience for me because everyone who I told about this opportunity thought it was the strangest thing that a woman would think that it made any sense to be a part of leading a men's group. But the men were the very ones that said, "We're glad that you're here. We want to know your story, and we want to understand how our stories are connected to yours." There was some deep sharing in that group, and we still get together every once in a while to talk about how we are doing, to recognize that connection that we had in that space. And then we started using circles in the shelter. First, we started using circles in the context of staff meetings to process challenging cases that we were dealing with. Then we started bringing former residents into this opportunity to have circles so that we could hear from them what worked and what didn't work about being in shelter, and what worked and didn't work about transitioning out. We started training our volunteers and our interns on the circle process of coming together and sitting and listening and being. Because as we had found, so much of this work is traumatizing. So much of this work pulls us in so many different directions that it is almost impossible to hold on to ourselves, to the sacredness of who we are as humans, and to the sacredness of who those folks are that come to us, who need our support, who need us to be strong and loving and connected so that they can believe that it is a possibility. We started in our shelter to love one another into being. And this opportunity to bring people together in circle transformed the way that we do work in the shelter. We were able to get rid of all of our rules. We were able to allow the residents to make their own decisions about how they wanted to use the kitchen or other spaces in the shelter. All the things that we felt like we were putting into place to keep it safe and calm and good, we could throw out the window and understand that these individuals, on their own wisdom and understanding, knew how they needed to be. We all have struggles, all of us. And unless and until we have a way of processing them together, we will not be healed and we will not find transformation. At the Unitarian Universalist Urban Ministry, we live out our mission through the Roxbury Youth Program, through Renewal House, through Bethany House, and through the Jericho Road Roxbury Volunteer Engagement Program. But more than that, what we're dreaming and envisioning and hoping for now, more than that, is that through each of these endeavors, we are uniting communities and transforming lives just through knowing one another. Through knowing one another and one another's stories, being in relationship with one another, listening to one another, listening to our pain, our grief, our joy, our successes, and through so building the beloved community. A community that we've all hoped for and dreamed of. As you may be aware, there's been a lot of hurt in Roxbury. A lot of hurt around the issues of race and class, and most recently, gentrification. And the urban ministry is positioned on this hill, positioned to be a sacred and central space for the stories of the Roxbury community and the stories of the Unitarian Universalist congregations who support our work and our ministry. We come together because we want things to be different. We want things to be different, and we have to tell our stories and listen to other people's stories to heal from these stories. We are situated in a community, all of us are situated in a community that desperately needs transformation. All of the systems that we are surrounded by and influenced by hold us back. They hold us back from our sacredness and our humanness. So I'm here, Rebecca's here, Elise is here, Alan is here, many others in this room who have connected with us are here because we want you to join us. Your story is important. And there are stories of others that you don't know that you need to hear. And it will be amazing to see the connections that you will make when you hear these stories. With all of the struggle and the conflict in this world, I recognize we cannot do this alone. Let us take the brave step to say, we need one another. And we need to slow our lives and ourselves down. We need to slow our lives and ourselves down enough to acknowledge one another and that deep, deep need to know and be known. Amen.